Okay, now this is a sort of a strange talk in the sense that unlike all of the other talks you've experienced, this will be about something that you're not supposed to work on. Okay, and it will perhaps become clear as I go further. And of course, feel free to ask questions, and I'll about detail and such.
Sorry, can I see your this thing again?
Yes. Oh.
No, it just wasn't recording. It wasn't picking up the audio.
Uh-huh. Well, since I'm not actually human, my voice doesn't usually record on these things. No. We're going to start with F is going to be a field. I don't know if we know what this is, but basically this is an algebraic structure where we can add, subtract, multiply, and divide, okay, and except, of course, by zero, not by zero. Okay, and examples the rational numbers. The reals, the complexes, and Z mod PZ. So the integers modulo P. And if you only know those four fields, in fact, you only need to know two of them, and although it's hard to imagine that you haven't seen both the rationals and the reals. And those are two different examples. And the integers modulo P will come up incredibly briefly. Okay. And now, there's a problem, is that what I want to do is look at a map, a polynomial map. Well, I guess I need to start off with, I'm going to work with R is a polynomial ring. F adjoin n variables. Okay, so basically I can add, subtract, multiply polynomials. I cannot divide polynomials, but I can divide by like real numbers. I mean, you could just pretend you have the real numbers, polynomials over the real numbers, and that pretty much is the easiest case to deal with. Now I want to look at a function, say phi from R to R, which takes xi to yi, which is just going to be a polynomial in the x's. Okay, so x1 goes to some polynomial in the x's, x2 goes to some polynomial in the x's, x3 does, and so on. Of course, there could just be one x. Okay, and now, question. Is phi onto? Okay, well, of course, it depends on phi. Okay, it's pretty clear that if I map all the x's to themselves, I get a map that's onto. Okay, and on the other hand, if I map them, like if there's two x's and I map them both to x1, it's not going to be onto. Okay, but, can we tell? Can we tell if it's onto? Okay, and that the nature of this function is that, for example, x1 squared plus x2 squared goes to y1 squared plus y2 squared. So everything goes, polynomials go to where you think they go. You just map each x1 to where it goes, and then the polynomial does what it wants. Okay. Well, alternatively, is each xi a polynomial in y1 through yn? Okay? So can we make the y's out of the x's? Can we also make the x's out of the y's? Okay, in the same way. Now, let's start with the easy case. What's the easiest possible value for n? Well, I don't want to take n equals 0. That's not very interesting. Okay. N equals 1. Okay. So, x, we just have one x. x1 is x. And this maps to y, which is going to be, say, an x to the n plus a naught. And let's assume an is not 0. So y goes to a degree that allows n to be, let's use m since I'm using n for something else, right? It goes to a degree m polynomial, and we could have m be 0. It rules out the case where x goes to 0, but that's not a very interesting map to look at. Okay, so it happens here. Well, it turns out that let g be equal to bk y to the k plus b naught. What's the degree of g, the degree in x of g going to be? So I raise y to various powers and add them up. The b's are, all the b sub i's and the a sub i's are all in f. Can we tell what this degree is going to be? Anybody know? It's basically, since y has a degree m term, when we raise y to the kth power, this am x to the m is going to get raised to the kth power, and this is going to have degree m times k. Okay? Well, if g is actually equal to x, m times k better be equal to 1, and in factorization of positive numbers, this suggests that m equals k equals 1. Okay? And so the only way we can get an onto map is if m is actually equal to 1. Okay? So the only possibility x goes to ax plus b, a non-zero. Okay, and this is y. Well, in fact, can we make x out of y? Sure. I mean, x is just what? Well, if y is ax plus b, then x is equal to what? Y minus b times 1 over a, which is, I guess, 1 over a y minus b over a, right? Okay. So we're done. Okay. I've completely solved the n equals 1 case, so I only have infinitely many more numbers to go. Okay. And to be finished here. Okay. Now, I might point out that the derivative of y with respect to x happens in this case to be a, which happens to be non-zero, and a is in f. Right? That's a fact about the derivative. That's not particularly interesting at this time, but later on you'll sort of see that that's actually an interesting fact. And that's the only kind of polynomial that has this property, that its derivative is a non-zero constant, is a degree one polynomial. Okay. Now let's go to larger n. Let's consider n equals 2. This problem is a little harder, as in the idea that walking to the sun is harder than walking to, CPE. Okay? So, in any case, I'm going to do some sort of chain rule for partial derivatives. The partial derivative of x1 with respect to x1, which, by the way, happens to be equal to 1. Okay, but I'm going to do it in some really convoluted way. This is equal to the partial of x1 with respect to y1 times the partial of y1 with respect to x1 plus the partial of x1 with respect to y2 times the partial of y2 with respect to x1. The partial of, let's say, oh, that was a 1 there. Oops. I'll write it over here. Now, the partial of x1, of x2 with respect to x1 is equal to the partial of x2 with respect to y1 times the partial of y1 with respect to x1 plus the partial of x2 with respect to y2 times the partial of y2 with respect to x1. Okay. And by the way, what is that partial? Take the partial of x2 with respect to x1. That should be what? 0. Okay. Now, there's a couple more that I could do, but I'm not going to. I mean, we could also do partial of x1 with respect to x2 and the partial of x2 with respect to x2, right? But we get an interesting equation here. I'm actually going to do those two, but I'm going to do it in a rather strange way, is that I'm going to write a matrix equation. Partial of x1 with respect to y1, partial of x2 with respect to, this is x1 with respect to y2, times partial of y1 with respect to x1, partial of y2 with respect to x1. I've just done the top. This is going to be a 2x2 two by two matrices I'm going to multiply together. And the upper left entry is going to be this times this plus this times that. And, of course, the upper left entry is just going to be partial of x1 with respect to x1. Now, I can do this a little faster because, now what was my second entry? I had a, do I have dx d2? I think these are different, yeah. These are partial of x2 with respect to y1, partial of x2 with respect to y2. They actually got multiplied times the same two things. So what goes down here is the partial of x2 with respect to x1. Now, it should come as no great surprise, probably, that if I put in here, instead of the partials with respect to x1, I put in the partials with respect to x2. I get the same partials with respect to x2. Partial of x1 with respect to x2, partial of, partial of x2 with respect to x2. And this matrix is, lo and behold, what? The identity. This is the identity matrix. Okay, so this matrix times this matrix is going to be the identity matrix, which means that this matrix is invertible. Okay? This is an invertible matrix. Okay? And this is, by the way, finally have to get this word in here, this is the Jacobian matrix. Okay? So, if, let's use the word here, necessary condition if phi is onto the Jacobian matrix, is invertible. Okay, so this is a test for whether or not, at least we find out this one thing about this. Yes?
Just to be clear, the lower right entry of that, shouldn't that be
y2? Y2, yes, it should be. Yes, thank you. Okay, yes, okay. And so the Jacobian matrix has to be invertible. By the way, the reason you may wonder, they both have to be invertible, okay. This matrix I understand, okay. This matrix is extremely obscure because I don't know how to write x. If I don't really know if x1 is a function of the y's, I don't know how to take the partial derivative, okay? But I do, since I do know what y1 is and what y2 is in terms of x1 and x2, these are partial derivatives we actually know how to take, okay? So this matrix makes good sense, okay? Now, of course, if we call this matrix, say, A and B, okay, then 1 equals the determinant of A, B equals the determinant of A times the determinant of B, which means determinant of B has an inverse in the ring. It is a non-zero element of the field. okay? It has to be a non-zero element of the field, okay? So consequently, this Jacobian matrix, okay, we can spot. I mean, for example, suppose I try this. Y1 equals X1 plus X1 squared plus X2 squared. Y2 equals 3X2 minus X1 cubed. Okay. The Jacobian matrix is, what is it? We have to take the derivative of this, this is x1 here. 1 plus 2x1, 2x2, and now this is derivative of this one, 3 minus 3x1 squared. Yes. Absolutely the other way around. Minus 3x1 squared and 3. Okay. And the determinant is 1 plus 2x1 times 3 plus 6x1 squared x2. And this is not a field element. Okay, so this is, so phi is not onto. We can immediately check by looking at the, computing the, we have any map, we can compute the Jacobian, the determinant of the Jacobian matrix, and we can see whether it passes this one test. Okay, now, also for n equals 1, the Jacobian matrix is just dy1, dx1. It's just a 1 by 1 matrix. And as you may recall, in fact, we ended up onto if and only if this was equal to A, and of course, the determinant of 1 by 1 matrix is just the entry, okay? So in fact, the condition that I said was necessary is indeed necessary in the 1 by 1 case, okay? I mean, that was the setup in the 1 by 1 case, okay? Now, n greater than 2 we get the same condition with a bigger Jacobian matrix. Okay, we just have, for example, in the 3 by 3, partial with respect to x1 of y1, partial with respect to x1 of, partial with respect to x2 of y1, partial with respect to x3 of y1, partial with respect to x1 of y2, partial with respect to x2 of y2, partial with respect to x3 of y2, and then I guess we do the same thing with y3, and I won't write it all out, but okay. The Jacobian matrix makes perfectly good sense in higher no matter how large n is, and in fact the proof that it's necessary is exactly the same proof, because those two matrices are exactly what the chain rule will always give you. So we're pretty much done, except for one last question, which of course is everything. Is this condition sufficient? Okay. Well, first of all, I'll get right to thing with look at the integers z mod pz. Let y equals x to the p plus x. Okay. And what's the derivative? 1, because p is 0. Okay. We're making p 0. Okay. So it's not sufficient for ZP. So even in the n equals 1 case, but for if the field contains the rational numbers, in other words, I don't do this tricky stuff where I make P 0, then condition is sufficient. The only way you can get a constant derivative is by taking a function of degree 1. Okay? So everything is fine in the n equals 1 case, but hereafter we don't need to worry about this field, because obviously it... Now I should say what the Jacobian conjecture is. The Jacobian conjecture is the condition is sufficient. Okay. There are things that are known. Okay. Now, I want to read a short paragraph here, because this is amusing in terms of the great history of this. Okay. Also, and I want to point out that all of the people that I'm going to mention in this paragraph, or at least all but one, I'm not entirely sure about what, but I think all of them, are really, really top-rate mathematicians. Okay? And we are talking about published mathematics, sent to journals, get past referees, appear in print stuff. Okay? Also, several wrong proofs of the Jacobian conjecture were published. The first one appeared in 1955. Engel proved the Jacobian conjecture for n equals 2. It took 18 years until someone discovered two errors in Engels' proof. In the meantime, Segre produced 3 incomplete proofs in 1956, 1957, and 60. You've got to be really good to get 3 incomplete proofs in print, all using topological methods. In this third paper, he asked for a purely algebraic proof. This was given in 1961 by Grobner. Okay. However, Zariski showed that formula 14 was wrong. A more dramatic proof was given by S. Oda in 1980. He cited a lemma from a book of Muir incorrectly. Okay. Now, since that time, advances have been made in not so much in people's work on the problem, but in people's way of dealing with proofs. Okay? There are many of us who have worked on this problem, and pretty much everybody who has worked on it for any length of time has proved it. Okay? However, it is still out there. And in fact, I should say right now, in terms of how much it's out there, I'm going to give some partial results, but the n equals 2 case is still open. Okay? I mean, it's enough to have two polynomials in order that we actually don't already know what we're doing. My own best effort was I managed to come up with a proof. First of all, I got to the point where when I proved it, the first thing I did was savored my glory and waited several days before I looked at it again because I wanted to sort of keep that high. And then I actually went back and looked at it carefully and eventually found a mistake in it. One time I was absolutely certain that I had it, and there were some notes by this mathematician, Abhyankar, and he worked in a way that was somewhat similar to what I was doing, and it occurred to me that I could use his notation to write up my proof. And I looked at his notation, tried to do it, and it was going so well. It matched so perfectly. In fact, it matched so perfectly that my thought was, you know, there's only one way he could have missed this, okay, which is that it didn't work, okay, because he was just so close. And the key error really was that I integrated something which had a negative exponent, and I assumed that the integral had degree one higher, which, of course, if you integrate, what happens if you integrate, say, x to the minus 3? What do you get? You get something that involves x to the minus 2, right? Plus a constant, okay? So the degree leaps up from 3 to 0, and that leap is sort of what did me in. But lots of people have worked on this, and, you know, pretty much somebody works on it and gets a proof, and they hand it to somebody else, and they look at it for a few days. And nowadays, the stuff doesn't appear in print, okay? But there are still lots of wrong proofs that are still done. So it's, however, you can spend lots of time. I mean, I actually spent 4 years on it at one point. The one thing I learned in the 4 years was not to work on it anymore. Okay. I might point out that there are interesting maps. Interesting onto maps. For example, what did I decide to write down here? Let's see. Y1 equals x1 plus 3x2 cubed, and y2 equals x2 minus 6 times x1 plus 3x2 cubed quantity squared. Those are certainly two interesting polynomials. Can you make the x's out of the y's? Well, it's actually not too hard to see that if you have these two, with this, you can change this one into x2. And now that you have x2, you can change this one into x1. So this is an example of something that's invertible. And if I actually wrote out what the polynomial terms are, you could see that its Jacobian is actually... I don't know what it is, but it's some number. It's going to be some... Actually, I know a lot about it. Because it's got to be an element of the field. No, I guess not. It can be any... No, integers are invertible. So, you know, it might involve a 6 and a 3 and something. I guess I don't know. It's just some rational number. Okay. not zero. Okay. So what's known? Okay. Well, there's an interesting result, which is that if y1 through yn are polynomials of degree at most 2, then the map is onto. Okay, this is assume, let's just assume the determinant of the Jacobian matrix is 1. You can, if the determinant is 5, you can just multiply y1 by 1/5 and make it into 1. But let's just assume the Jacobian. If the Jacobian matrix can't be, the determinant can't be made into 1, then it's not invertible. I mean, the map is not onto. But if, in fact, the Jacobian is 1, we don't know if it's onto or not, but it is actually onto if all of the polynomials happen to be quadratic. Okay? And the proof of this is beyond the scope of this, although the idea of it is actually rather simple. Okay? Onto is the same as a function being injective. If I have y1 is, say, x1 squared and y2 equals x1 plus x2, suppose I have that, then there's sort of a natural function that takes, say, 2, 3 to 2 squared 2 plus 3, which is 4, 5. Okay? You have sort of an obvious polynomial function. And it turns out that the way I phrased the problem before is the same as this map being 1 to 1. You probably don't. Injective is probably a weird term. I'm not sure if we have that in our vocabulary. Okay. And the reason this works is a rather bizarre fact that all of you know, probably, I hope, that if between here and here, there is a place where the derivative is 0, right? Okay, there's several of them. Okay, for quadratic functions, what can you say about quadratic functions? There's only one place where the derivative is 0, and where is that? Okay, well, it's a maximum here, but where is it in this picture? What? It's halfway. It's got to be halfway. Right? It's got to be halfway. The interesting thing is that if this function is maps to two things, I mean, this function is really not one function, but two functions. If they agree, it turns out that in between those, halfway in between those two points, all of the derivatives will be 0. You know, I mean, you've got a bunch of functions, but they all have derivatives of 0 at the same place. And the Jacobian being 1 says, no, that can't happen. Okay? And so that's what happens when you have quadratic functions. Very nice fact about quadratic functions. Okay? Now there's another result, which is can we do this? If degree yi is less than or equal to 3 for all I. The answer is no. Okay. Well, actually, I can't say no. If the Jacobian conjecture is ever proved, then in fact it will be proved when the degree is at most 3. Strangely enough, it is actually possible to convert any possible counterexample to one with degree yi less than or equal to 3. Okay? Now, this conversion comes at a cost. Okay? For example, and I'm going to make stuff up here, but suppose we have n equals 2, degree of y1 equals, say, 68, degree of y2 equals 102. Okay? We can convert to a counterexample with degree y1 equals 3, degree y2 equals 3, degree y3 equals 3, degree y4 equals 3, degree y78 is 3. I don't know exactly how far I have to go, but n gets really big. I can lower the degrees by adding more variables. Okay? So basically, in order to prove the Jacobian conjecture in the n equals 2 case, using this result, you would have to prove the degree 3 case for every possible n. Okay? Now, so much for degrees. Let's stick to n equals 2. And let's say y1 is f, y2 is g. Two polynomials. Okay. What's known? We cannot get a counterexample unless degree G, degree F, degree G have at least 3 prime factors. So, and that allows for repetition, so I'm not saying definitively that there isn't a counterexample where degree of f is 8. I mean, that's allowed, but you can't get something with really simple numbers. Okay. It's also true that either degree of f or degree of G is greater than 100. Okay? It's possible to deal with small cases. Okay? I proved part of this myself. Somebody else had proved it before me anyway, so I didn't finish the proof. But I was using different techniques, and we both developed techniques and a computer program. He did it before I did, and essentially what we discovered was the fact that some pairs, 64, 48, 75, 50, what was the other ones? 84, 56, and 99, 66. In both cases, our computers sort of said, I don't know, maybe there is something like that. Okay, as I said, we did it slightly differently, but we both came up to the same four problem cases. He actually had written a paper 10 years earlier, and in fact, he dealt with those four cases. I didn't see any point in actually trying to figure out how to prove those four cases. But the reason it's 100, of course, really is that's a nice place to stop. Okay. I mean, certainly, it's an instantaneous improvement is possible, okay, because 101 is a prime number, okay? So surely there's no example where degree of F is 101, okay? And that's the big one, okay? And on the other hand, I suspect, I don't think I ever did this, but I suspect, I mean, this is something that looks plausible, but I may have checked that one, and he probably checked that one, too. I mean, but one can go sort of, and of course, 103 doesn't present a problem. But, I mean, there's a certain point where you say, okay, as the computer went, you know, as you get further and further along, it gets slower and slower, you know. And you gradually get more bad cases, and at a certain point you say, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. Although, certainly, people who have looked for large prime numbers and worked on Goldbach conjecture and things like that have actually, you know, worked things out to absolutely ridiculously high numbers, okay? But in algebra, we don't tend to go quite as far extreme as number theorists do, okay? But this is certainly a problem which has led to incredibly many incorrect proofs. Okay, and and I guess that's a minute early. But should I just talk or should I? Okay, so I take questions.
No, I
don't know that. I mean, I know. I mean, of course, you have to do it for all n to get anything from this. I would imagine that, you know, one people have sort of fooled around a little bit and gotten people have fooled around a little bit and actually, like, dealt with n equals 3 or n equals 4, but I don't know that anybody's ever, like, said, well, what happens with n equals 100? By the way, there's one more thing I might say about the n equals 2 case. There is one obvious thing that you can do for a map, which is, like, for example, you can map x to x plus 2, or you can map, you know, x1 to x1 plus 2. You can also shuffle the variables around. So x1 goes to x1 minus x2, and x2 goes to x2 plus x1. And so you can sort of rotate your variables. Or there's this trick where you go from, you know, x1 goes to x1 and y1 goes, so an x, let's see, oh, how did this get way over here? Okay, basically, y1 equals x1 and x, y2 equals x2 plus, say, a constant times x1 to a power, okay? And you can compose a whole bunch of maps like this. And I think it's true, although this is old knowledge or such, I think it's true that all of the onto maps in the n equals 2 case come about basically by taking those two things I discussed, okay? Although I'm sure that in n equals 3, there are other kinds of things popping in, okay? So when n equals 3, people don't even understand what the onto maps are, even if they knew that this was a test. Okay? If F and G were both irreducible.